Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
Good news, everyone! It's Talking Futurama, where it's Robonza 365 days a year! I'm your host, searing hot resin fan Bob Mackey. I like it in my pee hole. And this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of Futurama. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and hopefully I'm activating your hilarity unit.
Except for the word blurn, this podcast is complete gibberish. I'm Matthew J.
And today's episode is Fear of a Bot Planet.
That's for sure.
Today's episode aired on April 20th, 1999. And as always, Henry will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
Terrible news, Bobby. While other news apparently happened today, it's really only known for the Columbine High School massacre, where 12 students and one teacher died and 21 others were harmed, which honestly sounds pretty tame these days, I have to say.
Shreds, you say?
Fortunately, everything but easy access to guns was blamed, and the gun massacres became a thing of the past after that.
Video games got so much less violence.
Yep, they did.
Couldn't they have waited a day?
Just wait, don't you want to watch Futurama?
Yes.
So we all have Columbine memories, I'm sure. I'll start with mine. Bob has the most interesting.
Yes.
I don't want to say best. Mm. Mine was April 20th. I had a friend who had just gotten into weed in my sophomore year in high school, and he had been explaining to me that, like, yeah, 420 is the best day. It's the weed day. You get high on it. I was grappling with the idea of 420 meaning weed. During the course of the day, and we were in East Coast time, so it was actually way late in the day that the news came out at school. I think it might have been right before I came home. In the pre-social media world, there was a buzz that something horrible had happened at a school, and this was hardly the first school shooting. It was just like the biggest to splash on the news, but there were more than a fair share in the 90s. And then when I got home, I got to see the video of, like, say, bloody corpses falling out of windows and the children running away. And to live in the reflection of Columbine was to have high school become horrible, because at my high school in Orange Park, Florida, they would not spend the money on, like, metal detectors, but there was an increased paranoia and fear everywhere there. You had to walk around wearing a lanyard with your fucking picture on it.
Wow.
Because it's like, I'm not a stranger coming to school, which, guess what? The guys who murdered people at Columbine were students there. They would have had the lanyard.
Yep.
But if you even brought up how stupid that was, you were wrong, and maybe you're planning a shoot up too.
That sounds like a school shooter, Henry.
Yes, and it was the intensity of the paranoia reached its apex at our school when there is a locker in the hallway. It is making a clicking noise, which, if you're very paranoid, sounds akin to a time bomb, like out of a cartoonish time bomb. They send all of us to the football field to get us out of the school. They send the bomb squad from the police there. They open it up. It is a tape Walkman that stayed on fast forward all the way. It was like, click, click, click. I can't fast forward anymore. That's how terrified it was to be a high school student. I absolutely thought it was stupid. I was one of the geeks who would love to have murdered a bully, but then you couldn't even joke about it, because that's what the Columbine guys did. Like, I fucking hated them. You couldn't wear a trench coat. You couldn't, like, but then there were the kids who the transgressive thing was to wear a trench coat. But anyway, it was fucked up to be in high school post Columbine.
Totally. Wow. I have my own story, and we're bringing people down in this episode, but I got to say,
it's a fun episode. We'll bring it back up.
It's a fun episode, my own tragic story that I've told before, but I recommend you go listen to the last podcast on the left series on Columbine. They were all, you know, weird nerds who were teenagers at the time, like me, and they really go into how this fucked up a lot of people. A lot of people became scapegoats. A lot of people were persecuted even more. Mm-hmm. And I was like what my high school, the closest thing my high school had to a goth, which was not a goth at all.
I
did not even have long hair. I had a boring ass haircut. You couldn't have long hair in Catholic school.
Oh.
So I had a boring ass haircut. I liked Weezer in anime. That's about as weird as it got. And Futurama. And boy, I did not know on this day with this great episode that what my life would change. Everyone was suspect. Any weird kid was suspect in high school at this time. And because everyone in my high school sucked, I made a lot of internet friends, as you did back in the late 90s. Mm. And I brought a camcorder to school. How dangerous. to film little sketches about my school to send to my internet friend. Yeah, as a goof. You know, you're a kid. You play around with a video camera. By the end of the day, that was Purple Monkey dishwashered into Bob Mackie is filming escape routes for his upcoming massacre. Ugh. And this was spread by bullies who bullied me the previous year that nobody did anything to stop. So it was a problem that could have been stopped. But so by the end of the day, I'm sitting at home playing on the computer. My mom is on the phone and I'm like, she comes in like crying. I'm like, what's happening? And she's like, you can't come back to school. They think you're going to shoot up the school. And I'm just like, what the hell?
You just want to play the seventh guest.
Yes, exactly. Wow. It's like, I'm trying to solve Myst here. but it was a big, long rigmarole, and one day I'll write a long thing about it. But eventually, we had to get a lawyer to screen this video, this mythical video, in front of my principal, because they're like, Bob cannot come back to school until we see this video. And while I'm gone, my life is over. Like, they're having assemblies about me. Like, what do you know about Bob Mackie? Things like that. Like,
that's yes. incredible.
How many kids were in your school?
Probably like 300-500, maybe.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So everyone is involved.
Everybody.
My high school had 3,000 kids in it.
Oh my god. Yeah, it was a relatively small Catholic school, but to make a long story short, we screened the video for the principal with a lawyer in the room, and she's like, this is gonna be great, because it's a bunch of me fucking goofing around doing goofy high school shit. Like, I remember the one thing that made me laugh that I had to stifle while I'm being interrogated is a scene of me in front of a Coke machine, and I was like, this is where soda is born, like doing like a little fake sketch, and they're just like, oh my god. Like,
you tweeted that and I laughed out loud at that. That's pretty
like,
solid.
That's pretty clever. I was pretty funny at 17.
I still think that's pretty funny.
So but, after all this, they're seeing the proof of, like, they had nothing to be afraid of.
Yes.
That was so idiots. Stupid.
Idiot adults.
And it gave me a taste of, like, the sort of narcissism that 9/11 would inflict in people, where it's just like, there was an event. That now I'm next. Mm-hmm. It has to be me, the most important person, who is next.
And I will be the hero of that, and I will prevent that when the next person is going to do this thing.
But I remember, I'm going on about this, I remember
I'm
that...
sorry, Bob. I just want to hug Bob during this
whole
thing.
All my pain is coming up. But I remember, like, even at 17, and I think that now, it's just like, why would these people think I would throw my life away killing them? Like, I want to go do cool things when I leave this fucking hellhole.
I'm going to kill so much cooler and smarter people.
I'm going to kill celebrities.
Yeah.
But when you're that paranoid and you just see the children as aliens or monsters out to kill you.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I mean. Bowling for Columbine, the film, crystallizes it perfectly of, like, all those videos. The video in that movie that he got of, like, trying to sell people metal detectors, like, here's all the ways a kid hides a gun in their clothes. It's like, no kid does that.
Yeah.
If they're but sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I mean, I the reason I went on a long time about this in our comedy show is it was a very formative experience in my life, and it probably explains a lot about me and why I take no bullshit from anybody because of what I've been through. Like, that whole year was hell. I lost all my friends. That's the reason why I have no friends left in Ohio outside the people I went to college with who also fled Ohio.
How old were you again?
17 when it happened.
So it was like the end of high school, right? It was were you a senior?
The last year of high school,
that's child abuse.
Yes.
Like, that is and that they... I don't want to explore this too much more, Bob, because this is so horrible. But, like, you said that they then had an assembly where they're like, they tried to put it in the past. Like, let's forget about it.
Yes.
Like,
after that, they had an assembly that was couched in, you know, let's all be nicer to each other. And
did they give you a cake or anything?
There was no cake. There was no, like, party hats or anything. But I remember during the assembly, I stood up as like, this is all about me. Why don't you just say it?
Yeah.
And I got like a round of applause, which is pretty cool. Like, redeeming.
Wow, yeah.
That's like a John Hughes movie.
Yes. It's like, I did feel like I was living a John Hughes movie. But after that, a teacher pulled me aside. I was like, we are all trying to move on from this.
Shut up.
Yes.
Yeah, of course they would want to move on from their giant fuck up on you. Like, that's in general with bullies or shitty authority figures that once they've lost, they're like, well, look, we don't need to talk about this anymore. Like, why don't we move on? Let's just move on.
And please keep this quiet. Yeah, I'd appreciate it if you kept this quiet.
Please do. No, I mean, I have... No, I had that too with the with Orson Scott Card, who spent millions of dollars to prevent marriage equality from happening, couldn't shut his fucking mouth about it. Once it was over and everybody's like, hey, you're still a fucking bigot. They won and you're a bigot. He's like, look, it's law of the land. Let's just move on. Mm-hmm. Let's just all be accepting of each other.
Let me write Iron Man again.
Yeah, like, fuck you, Orson Scott Card. You were this transgressive person, and you can't, especially if you didn't change your mind or say you were sorry, you don't get forgiveness.
Yeah, yeah. And I told the story, number one, it's very formative for me. Number two, this is why Futurama was a very important show for a lonely elder teen Bob Mackie. Like, I needed all the humor in my life I could get, and that's why this show... I just watched it over and over again with The Simpsons. Like, I had no one, but I had cartoons.
Yay.
And they kept me happy. That's why I'm doing this. That's why I'm a broken
what
man.
What a cartoon on its own feed now.
So thank you for exploring my psyche.
Well, Matthew, did you have any Columbine memories? You are younger than us. You were nine in high school when it happened.
I was nine when it happened. I was barely cognizant of it, but I, of course, remember the news and stuff. It's not quite a couple years later. I vividly remember the news of 9/11. Like, that's the news cycle. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this was a step toward that. But I definitely remember the fallout for sure. Like, that summer was The Matrix, and I loved The Matrix. It was the first R-rated movie I saw in the theater, and of course it was, you know, the had to have some controversy around it, like every big movie does, and everything did. Every weird show and every weird thing, because I also became a weird kid, and I didn't wear a trench coat, but I had friends who wore trench coats and had mohawks and stuff. So, you know, and they would call us and our friends like the same things, but it wasn't as bad. And we almost like were so removed from it. Probably like kids today are about 9/11, as we were cool.
Yeah. That certainly happened.
Yeah. Like, I definitely didn't have to. I mean, I was bullied very harshly, but not about no one. I don't think anyone ever said I would shoot up the school, or if they did, I think at that point, they would have been shut down by a faculty member, because it was not cool. Because at that point, school shootings were not, they're not like today, where it happens literally every day of our lives. Yes. But they definitely became more common as I was a teenager. I think I often say that I was the last child who my mom would say, go play and come back at dinner. Like, I think I'm the last kid who got to do that, because it was not, did not happen with anyone a year younger than me.
The last free millennial.
The Matrix was blamed for sure, among many other things. And it's...
Which, when did The Matrix come out? Was it not a summer movie?
We actually talked about it on several Futuramas ago. That was...
Oh, yeah.
It came out weeks before this. And so, of course, you have a movie about people in trench coats shooting people. Like, it's, you're going to blame it. But I guess the last thing I want to say about this is that to typify the feeling of the time for me and how mad I was about what schools were turning into then, I didn't have anything like Bob's experience, but just the fear of it and how I felt like this, the wrong lessons were learned, was The Onion had this headline a year later of like about how security guards in Columbine finally let bullies feel safe again.
My final thing is, it's so funny that people got it so wrong. Columbine was not Revenge of the Nerds. Columbine was a bully and his little wiener friend doing it all.
Yeah.
It wasn't nerds. They were killing nerds.
Yes, the nerds all got shot by those assholes. Like,
now who's ready to laugh?
It's an episode about murdering all humans.
Speaking of Columbine
and about race relations.
Maybe the title is
I have a lot of notes
Wait a minute, it's all coming together now in my brain.
But so this episode called Fear of a Bot Planet, if you don't know, that is a reference to the Public Enemy classic, which I was like the first rap album of scary black people that I listened to as a youngster. and I loved it. Like, and there's a quote in it about explaining what the fear of a black planet means. It is the fear of white supremacists, of the idea that is explained in a sample in one of the songs of white man, white woman, white baby, black man, black woman, black baby, black man, white woman, black baby. And it was just talking about how this guy explained the fear of a black planet. Like, what if everyone did become black?
Sounds like Alex Jones for a second, Henry.
What if they all became black with the devil?
Eric Andre is agent of the deep government.
We all know that's a psyop of the CIA.
I was going to do mine, but Henry has the best one. So I give up.
The globalists are going to turn us all black. That's good. That's good.
That sounds awesome.
I would definitely suggest anybody listen to Fear of a Black Planet.
It's a great album.
Especially, it really made me think about, like, oh yeah, Elvis should not mean shit to me either. Like, motherfuck him and John Wayne as as they say. But this episode is also has a certain militancy to it as well.
But there's we'll get into it, but like it's race stuff. There's also like religious persecution stuff and religious discrimination stuff. There's a lot of the first point I want to make about this is an X-Men problem, which is we found another way to put white actors in a position to have them be the lower class or the people who are treated poorly for what they are.
I mean, there's 8 million works of science fiction are just like, what if this thing in the news happened to a white person?
Yeah.
I think it goes something like this.
I'm not saying.
What if Iraq was full of white people? I think that would be Battlestar Galactica.
And we just a couple episodes, we had a discussion about, John DiMaggio's black voice and gay voice.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
We're not demonizing Futurama. I want to also put that out in the front. We're like, I don't think this is racist.
No,
this but you got to talk about it.
Yeah. They are dealing with that subject in this episode. It's a touchy subject to deal with for sure.
Yeah. It's on the table.
Yes. But, well, let's talk about who made this episode. This was written by two more freelancers, I believe, who didn't work on any other Futurama episodes, Heather Lombard and Evan Gore, writing team who would later get married.
Oh, really?
Okay.
This was, I think, almost their only primetime animation work, because the duo would then go over to Disney TV animation, and they would work on shows like Dave the Barbarian and the George of the Jungle reboot from the OOs. And
those
also,
shows are not good. Dave the Barbarian's okay. It's kind of funny.
All right. Yeah. And also My Littlest Pet Shop, they worked on together. So not really your typical Futurama writers.
Yeah. It's kind of strange, but it's a good episode. Also, this episode has three directors, and I was looking more to that. And I think it's because the people that were directing this are sort of training to become directors in their own right, like a singular director.
And I also thought it was because there's so much CG in here that
could
like,
be it too. Yeah.
Yeah. All the robot stuff.
But this is the return, and I believe final appearance in the world of Simpsons related content of Carlos Baeza. He is one of the credited directors.
Oh, you're right. Yes.
Carlos was one of the top directors in the early seasons of The Simpsons. His final episode was in season 5, Secrets of a Successful Marriage.
Wow. Went out on top. That's a great episode.
And I believe on the commentaries, they say he just went back to of his native country. I almost said
Cuba.
Wherever he came from. Yeah, Cuba.
Cuba.
Good. So,
but he came out of retirement, I guess, or whatever, to work on this and help Futurama in its early days. But this is the only episode of Futurama he worked on. To my knowledge, it's the only like American the most recent American animation he has worked on as well. You can check out his IMDb. But Carlos Baeza, I could feel a little bit of him in here. He was one of the more creative. His episodes just felt so fluid and lively.
Yeah, everyone was like a little more round and like their mouths had a different shape to them.
Yeah, they were very fun episodes, his ones. And this is a fun one as well.
I do like, so we get Blurn's Ball. It's named after an extra day David Cohen invented because they were working out the schedule for Futurama in terms of production, and they're like, we need another day, so he added Blurn's Day.
Lousy Blurn's Weather.
Yes, lousy Blurn's Weather.
Don't touch Willy.
But it's really funny that Blurn's is an attempt to dress up baseball, which is boring according to the characters.
We finally jazzed it up.
Yes, but baseball would like destroy Futurama. Like sports would destroy Futurama.
Yeah. It's like a preemptive dig at that.
I would also say in Manhattan, you will not see baseball at Madison Square Garden. That is where they play NBA and NHL games. The baseball games are either at Yankee Stadium or formerly Shea Stadium, now not MetLife, whatever. I don't care. But they wouldn't play baseball at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. It's more of basketball, hockey, and also wrestling/boxing, so in MMA too. Though now for WWE, they can't even book Madison Square Garden for TV because they charge way too much.
Is this the first Madison Cube Garden?
I think
it is.
So, yeah.
The That's first cool. appearance here.
That's a great stupid joke. It's such a great first draft joke that you can't, what else could it be?
It's a cube.
Yeah, also, the Looney Tunes clip in the opening is from Corny Concerto, the classic parody of Fantasia.
I had that one on a VHS tape as a kid and watched it again. It starts with the ducks, ducks swimming, and I think about that cartoon often. That's probably the most recognizable cartoon besides The Simpsons that they use.
I remember B.O.
Yeah. I remember as a kid the scene of that, the one that we see, which is Elmer Fudd taking Bugs' hands away to see the gunshot wound and finding a woman's bra. Yes. I remember as a kid that, like, affecting me. Being like, it's probably the first time I saw one that wasn't my mom's.
Yeah.
And it's a big one.
So. This intrigues me somehow.
Yeah. What's going on? Yeah. It's the
Bugs Bunny and Drag awakened things in lots of young
people. Yeah. It was the Wayne's World. I was having the Wayne's World conversation with myself.
So Blurn's Ball is confusing, but in our first clip, Fry is getting the hang of it. This clip is mostly sound effects, but I left them in to communicate how insane Blurn's Ball is.
Hey, I'm starting to get the hang of this game. The Blurns are loaded, the count's 3 Blurns and 2 anti-Blurns, and the infield Blurn rule is in effect, right?
Except for the word Blurn, that was complete gibberish.
I love the guy just going, Blurn!
Yeah, that's the goal. Yeah.
Should we call that line of the show already?
Oh, boy. I don't want to. All right, fine. I didn't want to call it this early, but I laughed too much at that.
Too.
Oh, wait, you're serious? Let me laugh even harder.
It's more like sound effects of the show, but this, like, not seeing the image, I'm like, that's great sound design. In my head, I'm thinking of the players looking afraid when the multi-blurns come out.
Yes.
Like, oh, no.
Also just screaming, blurns! as a giant spider comes onto the field for no reason.
Someone's riding it. Riding a giant spider,
It's beautiful.
So do we have the argument that starts?
Oh, yeah, I have that next.
Oh, but wait. First, they set up that Leela loves Blurn's Ball, which will pay off in a later episode when she is the first female player of Blurn's Ball.
Is that a Leela of their own or something?
Yes. With Hank Aaron and Bob Uecker as the guest star.
Bob Uecker.
Yeah, I've seen Mr. Belvedere naked. but also...
Oh, I forgot about that.
Also, I love in the future that she is still using a penciled scorecard for watching this game.
That you gotta do. People do that to this day. There's
probably an app for it.
Yeah. That's weirdos did
that. And lastly, that the Zoidberg can afford a hot dog, which future Zoidberg won't, but he would definitely eat something as disgusting as a hot dog.
He would be eating out of the trash in like the next season.
Yeah.
Ooh, a gift for Zoidberg.
But I will say, don't look for jokes in that baseball scorecard. It is basically just like names of writers and maybe like the two jokes I saw, jokes and quotes, is one was named Costanza and one was named Maris. So yes, sitcom characters. Very funny, but it's mostly Futurama writers.
It should have been Maris and... The
Niles, right?
Niles' wife.
Yeah.
What was her name?
Oh, no. Maris is Niles' wife.
Yeah. Oh, what's the one from Cheers?
Vera.
Vera. Maris and Vera, two unseen characters.
We actually get to see Vera, though, right?
And Dr. Claw.
Oh, no. Vera. We never see Vera. She's in one of the last episodes. She's about to arrive, and then then someone comes in and they're like, no, that's not Vera.
Who's her husband?
That's Norm.
Norm. Oh, okay, yeah.
There's one episode where she is about to walk on the screen. She gets hit in the face with a pie.
That's right. Yes, yeah, man. Good old Cheers. Let's do Cheers.
Ooh,
oh my God, I would fucking love to do talking Cheers.
I love Cheers. So here's Bender setting up the whole theme of the episode.
Miller's on a pace to hit 70 blurns.
He's good, all right, but he's no Clem Johnson. And Johnson played back in the days before steroid injections were mandatory.
Clem Johnson? That sack of skin wouldn't have lasted one pitch in the old robot leagues. Now, wireless Joe Jackson, there was a blurn hitting machine.
Exactly. He was a machine designed to hit blurns. I mean, come on. Wireless Joe was nothing but a programmable bat on wheels.
Oh, and I suppose pitching at 5,000 was just a modified howitzer.
Yep.
You know, you humans are so scared of a little robot competition, you won't even let us on the field.
What are you talking about? There's all kinds of robots down there.
Yeah, doing crap work. They're bat boys, ball polishers, sprinkler systems. But how many robot managers are there?
11?
Zero!
It feels like a mistake, but I do love Leela saying, yep, but we don't see her say that. Just off screen.
Yeah, that's true. And then the cleaning robot comes out and he's like,
yes.
Is this a human child? I wish.
So
this is the race stuff, though.
Yes,
definitely.
It starts with, so I'll get to that in one second, but one thing I want to mention is I always have to mention voice actor stuff because I'm obsessed with voice actors. Mm. There's one big one coming up later in this episode.
Ooh.
But, a big part of watching Futurama season one is Katie Sagal is the only not pro voice actor on the cast.
You're right.
Where she had done voice acting before, but she is sometimes out of her depth next to John DiMaggio.
Well, she's surrounded by masters.
Yeah, she's got Phil LaMarr, Billy West, all these people, and she gets better as time goes on, and that's fun to watch. Because that even a couple of those reads were like, you don't sound like you're outside in a stadium.
Yeah.
But everyone else is like talking loudly, and they're talking clearly.
Yeah, that's true.
There's one line in there, which I actually just listened to, and I've already forgot, where she just kind of like, kind of just almost whispers, and you're like, that's not how she would say it. You could have done another take. And I just noticed those things a little bit, because Katie Sagal is now like half her job is voice acting. She's on a ton of stuff.
Yeah, oh, I mean, sure. Even at the time, I noticed her her deliveries were a little weaker compared to the like season, like decades of, you know, cartoon voice actors around her. But she did get a lot better over time.
Yeah, absolutely. And they point out, in the, like I mentioned in another episode, anytime she goes, oh, Lord, it's like the funniest. That's yes. That's one of my favorite running gags on the show. But then, yes, so Bender mentions the old robot leagues, which is a reference to the Negro Leagues.
Yes, yes. Mr. Burns was a big fan of them.
Negro Leagues.
Yes. That is it in quotes. It's the name of the leagues.
Yes,
guys.
I'm allowed to say it.
You're not a baseball fan, but it was, that was when baseball was segregated, so you were not allowed to have black players could not compete with white players, so there were so many amazing players who never got a chance at Major League Hall of Fame careers because of literally racism, they were excluded from play.
Until Jackie Robinson.
Jackie Robinson was first, but there were many teams, especially in the American League, that were like, well, we don't care about Jackie Robinson. We're not having a black player. Like, I think the Red Sox were one of the longest holdouts. It's in the Curse of the Red Sox documentary HBO did, which was great. They have
that sounds good. I want to watch that.
They have an important part in where just like, well, you know, part of this curse was that they didn't sign any black players and thus missed out on a lot of talent.
Yeah.
That's a real curse they had on them.
A curse implies it was not deserved.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Jackie Robinson, was he 42?
41.
41. Wow. He was recently played by T'Challa.
Yes, Chadwick Boseman.
Chadwick Boseman has played like all the coolest historical black guys, including the fake one that we like... He's like run out of awesome. Like he played Jackie Robinson and he played a couple other ones like very recently. Like if you look at his roles, it's like, oh, cool. Like you've gotten to play like some of the most inspiring, cool guys and then up to Jackie Robinson. But so, then, yeah. Okay.
So the issue with doing this here and why it's slightly uncomfortable is that they are saying the robots in this society are second class citizens, which doesn't really come up all that much. And it actually is. It seems to be making a pro-segregation argument in that, yes, robots are too much better. By being machines built to be good at something, they should not compete with humans, which makes some theoretical sense, sure. Mm. But when you are also making robots the symbolically a marginalized race who was kept from playing things through segregation, that really mixes up your metaphors there. Mm-hmm. And it makes every character on this like sci-fi racist.
Yeah.
And being proven right multiple times. They're just like, oh, well, here's a stereotype about robots. And it's true. And it's like, what are you, when robots are black people in your version of this, what are you saying? It's
something.
I don't think it's intentional.
I don't think so either. No, but no. I'm glad they didn't keep that idea, like the second class citizen. I mean, we see robots with like families and who own businesses and who are actors and things like that. So
and sorry, Matthew, you were right. 42 was number.
42. Oh, 42. Okay,
that was the name of the movie too. So,
it's like you don't. It makes too much. That's one of those numbers. Like that can't be it. That's too many different numbers from pop culture.
But yeah, I just feel. It's weird because they're opening a real can of worms with Bender calling everybody racist, which on against robots, like he's especially saying, oh yeah, they're all clean and things and doing your jobs for you, but they don't get a chance at this. Like you could say that in America fits for African Americans, but it would fit for many marginalized people. Just like, yeah, they will change your baby's diaper, but they can't play on the team. That's gross. Like that's, but they kind of, it's, it makes it more difficult when they half-ass it.
It's too muddy because like Bender, you know, he's fighting against that, but, and his reasons for it, like his proof is like, look at me, I suck. Like I've never made anyone's life easier. Yes. So you're wrong. And that does strengthen his argument and does make it like, yeah, you guys have free will. So
yeah, that's true.
And they lose that whole theme after they go to the robot planet where it's more like Bender is, it's more about Bender than robots.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then it becomes a more muddled thing about racism racism and scapegoating, yeah. I'd say. They kind of lose the plot on its statement on racism or bigotry, I would say.
It's like they put a little too much garnish. It should be a garnish. Yeah. And as they say on Blank Check, there's a little bit too much paprika on the sandwich. You know what I mean? Like, paprika, just put a little bit in there. They lean into it maybe a little bit too much early on. But also, no one's ever thought about it as hard as we are right now.
No,
we are the first
no.
people to discuss this in this depth.
I can see the comments coming in, but we're going to move on because Farnsworth gets a call on the very futuristic device, a pager.
I love it.
And Hermes tells him they have to leave the Blurns Ball game, and then he's attacked by a pigeon. Apparently the damage to his hologram carries over to real life, because when we see him next, he's all bandaged up.
Yes.
So.
A fantastic joke.
I love the science of that, of like, no, he's in like some VR where whatever happens to his body will happen to him in real life. Or it's just, it's amazing. He's like, please turn me off. Hawa.
Like a giant VR, like a giant hologram bird came out that's made out of hard light that bit him.
A pigeon. And that he also, that this is now the second time in 5 episodes that a human has been carried off by a bird. They really like that.
It should have been an owl.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
You know, yeah.
So Farnsworth is going to brief them on Chopec 9.
Great news, everyone. You'll be delivering a package to Chopec 9, a world where humans are killed on sight. Why is that great news? I'm glad you asked that question, Fry. You see, Chopec 9 was colonized centuries ago by a murderous crew of radical robot separatists.
Oh, so just because a robot wants to kill humans, that makes him a radical.
Hey, hold on. I understand these robots hate humans, but how do they feel about humanoid aliens?
They're not fans.
That's why Binda will have to make the actual delivery.
Oh, I get it. Make the robot do all the work.
This is the first actual work you've ever had to do around here.
Well, I'm not doing it. It's a robot holiday.
Really? Which one?
Only Robotica. The holiest 2 weeks on the robot calendar.
Oh, come on, Bender. Last month it was Robomadon. And before that, Robanza.
Man, that one was a blast.
And he also had tuberculosis.
I also love the next line from Hermes, like, I respect your diversity to the extent the law requires. It's such a great line.
Which is also a very bureaucrat joke.
Though here's another aspect to that, that the idea of radical robot separatists. In the 1900s, there were radical black separatists who wanted to leave America and start new colonies in Africa.
Yeah, I was going
to
say the same thing. That's what, when you said, oh, it's about race, that's the first thing I thought of. Yeah. Not the Negro League thing, but the separatist movement thing.
Yeah, the separatist movement is something in history, in civil rights history. And so that, again, it connects it more to African American history specifically.
Yeah.
And it again muddies the water.
The X-Men problem.
Exactly.
When you look too hard into X-Men, you're like, you're almost all white and that guy's blue, but he's German. So,
but I mean, Chopec, do you have the explainer for it? I copy and pasted from the wiki.
Named after Carl Chopec, who coined the term robot in his 1921 play Rossum's Universal Robots.
That
so
is true.
The word robot is only like 100 years old.
Wow. Mm. Robot is a fun word, but android I like more.
I prefer robot.
Robot?
Yeah.
Replicant.
What about droid? As Cake Boss would say. I'm just stealing things from Comedy Bang Bang. Oh, God damn it. We're laughing at jokes from other podcasts.
We're repeating jokes on our show about repeating jokes.
Yes, hey, don't give away too much.
Now, Fox Sunday is better than ever when Futurama follows The Simpsons.
Feel like I'm home.
Would you kindly shut your noise hole?
For the action. For the adventure. You know where to go.
When you look this good, you don't have to know anything.
Futurama, after The Simpsons, Fox Sundays.
I really love Fry.
He's racist.
Yeah, dehumanizing dehumanizing Bender by saying it's populated with robots like a warehouse is populated with boxes. Yes. And then later, after Bender yells at him, he's like, I'd be mad too if you sent me to an uninhabited planet. Like,
They're microaggressions. He means well, but he's wrong and racist.
That's a perfect way to put it. It is. That before they had that deal, before that word existed, those were totally microaggressions.
I'm sure it was in a book.
At least Fry and Leela are nice enough to hang up Robonica decorations. They feel bad about, you know, letting down Bender and making him mad, but
and when he goes down to the planet, I also just love where he says, like, I'll try to keep that in mind. Like, remember, you hate humans. Yeah.
So Bender comes in with a distress signal.
I'm in trouble. They found out I work with humans and oh no.
Oh, my God! We have to go down and rescue them!
No, we can't! They'll kill us on sight!
Well, what are we gonna do?
I don't know! It's not an easy decision. If only I had 2 or 3 minutes to think about it!
And then a commercial.
That's a great game.
It's second only to Marge's thinking about products she might like during that act break. I don't have that.
I love that. In that case, it was Marge. The ads were Marge projecting them into our brains, but
which would happen on Futurama later.
Oh yes, yeah. Oh God, his dream break. Yeah, the teeth. My favorite of those ads was the teeth that are so strong they can eat other teeth.
And there was a joke in that episode, to skip ahead a bit, in that Fry makes a joke about how there's advertising on bananas.
Oh yes,
and that happens now.
Star Wars bananas.
Star Wars bananas. What the hell? Yeah.
Monkey ball bananas.
I do love that now. Things can't just be an ad for Star Wars or a car. It has to be both those things. Like, it's the official car of Star Wars. Watch the movie. Buy the car. It's like, can't this commercial be one thing?
The car's not in the movie.
I know. Yeah. That was one. I loved Black Panther, the movie. The one thing that soured me for it was right after seeing it was a commercial for the fucking cars they drive in the movie. I was like, God damn it. Come on.
Steal this car with your little robot chip.
I like that the plan they come up with is to have terrible robot costumes that expose their flesh, but no robot is fooled.
The robots are pretty dumb on this planet.
I think the only thing I'd add to this episode is I wanted to see a scene where Bender got caught. Like, how did Bender screw up and get caught?
That's true.
But they wanted to maintain the mystery of the robot planet. If you were there with Bender when he gets caught, then you see what it is. You're not experiencing it through Leela and Fry. Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I think this works into the lore of the robot planet in that they don't know really what humans look like. They don't know what they do. So Fry and Leela could conceivably be confused as robots.
They could just be very advanced robots. Yeah. No one's seen Earth for... actually, I know exactly how long it's been. Yes, we'll talk about it later.
They list the number of days,
I did the math.
Oh, cool.
But I also... I forgot to mention this in the Robotica stuff. The like, kind of snowflake cutout of Bender that on the paper that Fry unfurls is so cute.
It looks like the baby one that Hermes built. He's a little chibi Bender.
We're really getting ahead of time.
One of Leela's secret skills is doing the robot.
Yeah.
I forgot about that joke. I was like, that was a crappy robot from Fry.
And And meanwhile, Leela is a much better dancer. And then I could be misattributing this, but I definitely thought of Carlos Baeza when they had the kind of squishy reflection of Fry looking himself in the calendar. I was like, this is so... It reminds me of the squishiness of his episodes of The Simpsons as well.
That was not necessary, but great.
He says they look stupid and they should have gotten store-bought costumes. Yeah.
There wasn't a reference to Woolworths.
Yeah.
But I'm a store-bought costume guy. Making your own costume, I'm like, look, I'm not a cosplayer. I'll just fucking get it. I'll just buy it. Suit. I'll buy a Italian plumber or trench coat man.
Sexy cop with shorts.
Orange president.
Yes, sexy cop. How much money Thomas Lennon has been fucked out of by all those sexy cops with shorts, man?
They should have licensed it.
So the newly disguised Fry and Leela are tested.
Be you robot or human?
Robot, we be.
Yup. Just two robots out roboting it up.
Administer the test. Which of the following would you most prefer? A, a puppy, B, a pretty flower from your sweetie, or C, a large properly formatted data file? Choose!
Shoot, C. Is the puppy mechanical in any way?
No, it is the bad kind of puppy.
Then we'll go with that data file.
Correct. The flower would also have been acceptable. Ah. You may pass.
I like that there are two answers.
The robot test can have two correct answers, and then they will tell you it's the bad kind of puppy. Well, I mean, we're seeing in general all these robots are not smart. They are. It's something that Ken Keeler actually brings up on a later commentary, that he would get mad when people would think Bender is a computer. He's like, no, he is a robot with AI that has varying levels of intelligence. There's a line where Bender will later say, I need a calculator. Aren't you a calculator? I mean, a good calculator.
That's great. And there's a lot of 3D animation in this episode. Mm-hmm. So Brian and Leela are trying to stay inconspicuous, but at noon, all the robots come rushing out, crossing paths with each other like perfectly until 12:01.
It's a negative on this episode that I get it, they're very early in the show. They don't have a lot of robot designs, so basically they just mix and match two different robot designs.
They're gonk droids.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Only like the mayor and the resin robot are specially designed.
That's true, and I love the color design, even though it's depressing. It's all a bunch of grays, greens, and browns. It's just like an ugly, like rusty, cloudy planet.
Also, to bring you guys back to 1999, not just for with Columbine, but also in 1999, it was a special thing to see a cartoon reference a video game. I'd rarely seen that.
And Futurama would do this a lot, but it was special. Like, the Tetris reference is pretty cool.
And I was like, wow, a Tetris reference. This is a reference by someone who has played Tetris and knows how to play it.
I just remember watching this episode with my dad. That reference comes up, and I laughed at it. And my dad was like, do you know what that is? And I was like, yeah, it's columns.
Oh, my God.
Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bee Machine.
I was a Sega kid. You can't hold it against me.
God damn, that tent.
Bender is somehow a magician in the photo they show people.
I love that too. That is great.
Which he does have a flair for. He loves magic. Remember, that, Fry's dog.
Oh, that's right.
That's true.
So I really want to get to my favorite scene is Fry's pee break.
Is this line of the episode?
For me, it is, but I will say...
We did say Blurns already was the line of the episode.
There could be two.
Okay. Good episode.
I do want to say that the one thing missing upon reviewing this is the sound effect of peeing. And I know the network was probably like, no, Fry, you cannot have the sound effect of peeing.
Yeah, you know they tried.
Leela is very bad at guarding him, by the way.
Hurry up, Fry. Sir, are you aware that you're leaking coolant at an alarming rate? Let me just patch you up with some hot resin.
I think the leak's stopping itself. Wait. Yeah, there we go. Wait. Yeah.
What sort of robot turns down a free blast of searing hot resin?
I'm sorry. My friend and I have to go perform some mindless repetitive tasks.
Sounds like a romantic evening. I won't keep you.
Achoo!
Get the humanoid. Get the intruder. Intruder alert. Intruder alert.
I had to keep all that in just for the reference.
Another game reference.
Yeah.
I do. I actually have a link to it in case we talked about it in Homer Goes to College.
That's true.
But
the first one of the robots screaming was from the first remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Mm-hmm.
Donald Sutherland scene specifically. Yeah. But Intruder Alert is taken.
Yep, perfect.
From Berserk, the classic arcade game, which it was a big deal to have a game that talked then, believe it or not.
And people like David S. Cohen, or X. Cohen rather, are huge 80s game nerds, especially David S. Cohen, who at the time, maybe in the 80s, he was working on a game called Zoid, which is where Zoidberg's name came from.
Oh, whoa.
Wow. Yeah. And I think he submitted it to a bunch of companies, and I think at some point on Twitter, maybe, he posted the letter he got back from Broderbund, where they spelled his name wrong. Oh. It was a rejection letter.
Cohen should sue Pixels. Like, he should sue Sony Pictures for Pixels.
Yes, he should.
Yeah. They just made one of the best anthology of interest scenes into a bad film.
They made a 5-minute idea into a 2-hour-long movie. Yes.
Which they, in the commentary, they're like, man, we had to speed this up, but there wasn't a lot of ideas we had for this.
Also, in the commentary, they reveal that John DiMaggio is also a bit of a gamer, because he says, wait, that's Robotron, right? And they go, no, it's Berserk.
I think he's also a D&D nerd.
But yeah, he talks in this episode, he points out that the weapon Bender holds later is a glaive, and he kept saying different kinds of glaives, and someone, I guess David Cohen or someone, was like, what the hell are you talking about? And he went, it's Dungeons & Dragons, don't worry.
DiMaggio, DiMaggio was saying that before he became a gaming icon as Marcus Fenix.
Yes.
What about Waka?
Sure. He had been Waka by that point in Final Fantasy X for you non-FF fans. But by the way, I love Tom Kenny's sweet voice here. He's so friendly and nice. Like,
that's my other voice actor, Lee Thing, to bring up this episode. Is that is our first Tom Kenny on Futurama. Oh,
beautiful.
Which I'm pretty sure it's the first one. They were not sure in the commentary either. And I was like, oh, I forgot to even think about that.
I think it is.
It is the first Tom Kenny.
It's also the first extreme penis torture joke in Futurama.
Hardly the last.
Yeah.
And they also say in the commentary, John DiMaggio is like cast member of Mr. Show, Tom Kenny. He does not say SpongeBob. At this point, he's been SpongeBob for less than a year.
That's
yeah,
which is amazing.
Yeah, it's,
and his price would skyrocket.
Yeah,
I love Tom Kenny. He is so great. All of his interviews are great too. Like he's a lot like Billy West, though not as depressed. That he's
rich.
He's just he's just a big goofball who's just like, yeah, I'm a goofball. I love making voices. Ah.
And he would stay on the show even after he was famous as SpongeBob. Like SpongeBob skyrocketed, and he still shows up as like he's Fry's brother. He's big parts of the show.
Tom Kenny is a people pleaser. My example of that is, so I went to WonderCon in 2008 or 2009. It was the local comic book convention in San Francisco. This is when we are waiting forever for Arrested Development season 4. But Mitch Hurwitz is working on a new animated series called Sit Down and Shut Up, which aired for 1 minute on Fox, I think, pretty much.
And it split apart Oakley and Weinstein.
It did. It destroyed them.
Temporarily.
Yes, they're their buddies now. But I went to the panel for that just because I was like, talk about Arrested Development. And also, Job was there.
Will Arnett.
Will Arnett.
Yeah.
But also there was Tom Kenny. And so somebody comes up at the end, and Henry Winkler, who's just so nice, and Keenan Thompson. Aww. And then someone comes up in the questions and asks, let me tell you, never ask this question at a comic panel, folks.
Wait, it's not, where do you get your ideas?
No, it wasn't that. It was, could you say this line for me? And they asked, like, could you, Will Arnett, say, I've made a huge mistake? Mm-hmm. And could you, Tom Kenny, do the SpongeBob laugh? Mm. And could somebody else, and like, Will Arnett was like, no.
And, good for him.
But then Tom Kenny immediately was like, oh, this laugh, he just did it. He did it. I was like, Tom Kenny, you're better than this. You don't have to do this. And then they made fun of the woman of like, we have fucking Fonzie here. Make him say hey. He'll do it.
You say that's a question I never asked, but that is the question that is asked perpetually on that Inside the Actors Studio Simpsons episode. Like, can you do the voice of Homer?
That's what people want, though, from that.
That's what they wanted.
It sucks. I hated it. Just like,
I wanted to hear Yardley Smith tell a story, not read a poem.
I taped that and watched it again and again and again.
I'm sorry, Matthew. I just hate it. It's like, I believe Homer has a snack food he prefers.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Homer?
Apu, how much would that be at the store?
What's your favorite swear word, Bart?
So I think Mystery Science Theater fans will enjoy It Came from Planet
Earth. I love this so much. I thought I had a Steve Gay the whole time.
It's really good.
We interrupt this sound file to bring you a terrifying announcement. A non-metallic being has been sighted in the vicinity of Makeout Point.
Say, Wendy, your chassis is a little scuffed. Mind if I polish it for you?
Did you hear that, Rusty? It sounded like a human.
Relax, Wendy. Humans will never come to our defenseless little town. It's perfectly safe to let our guard down, even for a second.
I will eat and digest you all with my system of mighty organs. Behold!
Wow, the 3D's great.
Mine's not working.
Leela has one eye. I didn't capture the entire movie, but I love at the end, it's very observational that these people have seen these movies, because at the end of every one of these 50s monster movies, the monster dies and there's like 45 seconds left, and some military guy is always like, we should never have tampered in God's domain. I guess we learned an important lesson about humanity.
Well, and because in the 50s it's propaganda, it has to be a military man. Like, I as a military man am the smartest. We should have trusted. My favorite, I can't say which one this is because this was 800 MST3K episodes. It reminds me most of Invasion USA, which is honestly paid for by radical hard right people who are just like, you can't wait 1 second. The Russians will invade. If you cut military spending by a penny, you are dooming us to nuclear apocalypse.
It is like a reactionary conservative episode of The Twilight Zone instead of like a super liberal Rod Serling episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm. When they all wake up out of their coma and find out it was all a dream, like one guy says, I better reopen my weapons plan. And then the congressman is like, I need to stop that spending bill from not happening. It's creepy.
And the thing with the general saying there could be a human in this theater, and they all scream, and Fry goes, God help us. That is actually, I think, a reference to the William Castle movie, The Tingler, he was all about like gimmicks inside the theater. Like a skeleton would come down during a scene.
John Goodman was in a movie about that, right?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Was that about William Castle? Yeah. Okay.
Joe Dante movie. That movie's fantastic.
In The Tingler, I think some theaters were set up to not electrocute you, but buzz your chair, and only certain chairs would do it. Mm. And there's a scene in the movie, it's a great bad movie with Vincent Price, where the movie, they're looking for the Tingler. It will kill you. And all of a sudden, the movie, everything goes dark in the movie, just a pitch black screen. And Vince Price's like, the Tingler is loose in the theater. Everyone remain calm. And then you just hear screaming and everything. So it was just like, sort of like a sideshow attraction more than a movie.
Wow. Man. If I die, do I get a free coffin?
No. Oh boy, I love that sketch.
That's what's that? The Screaming Skull?
Screaming Skull.
I like on the extras on that MST3K disc. This is the second episode in a row we've talked too much about MST3K. But
they're interlinked.
Yeah. Yes, it's the same era of nerdiness.
Robot comedy where the bots show up in an episode of Futurama.
That's true. The Screaming Skull on the extras for that, they even admit like, oh no, we ripped this off from a Alfred Hitchcock film. Like, this is just that. What was the name of that one? Anyway.
What is it? Rope? I don't remember.
No, it was a woman's name.
Rebecca.
Rebecca, yes.
Did they do that in Rebecca?
Yeah, it's pretty much. The film is really gaslighting in both cases, in Rebecca and Screaming Skull. But I also love that a robot is built with a Letterman jacket. Forever be a robot in a Letterman jacket.
That is so great. I do like the system of mighty organs.
Yes, yeah. And that a simple stick, all of their magnets couldn't stop it, but a simple stick. Ironic, isn't it?
So I do enjoy the crummy robot that Leela insults.
Yeah, the one's
Fry.
Just like Fry. It's like, that was uncalled for.
That was a great gag.
And they find that Bender is the leader of the human hunt.
Many said I was too extreme when I first called for the annihilation of the human species, as well as some of the more cunning monkeys. But after living on Earth, I can tell you that I am, if anything, too merciful.
My God, he's become evil. I mean, eviler.
Thank you. And if you enjoyed that diatribe, then you'll want to purchase my spoken word album. Just $18.95. Act now, and you'll get this Bender action figurine.
Bite my shiny metal ass.
Had we heard that catchphrase after the first episode?
No.
I don't think so. I think this is their first leaning into it.
Yeah, I was like, are they deciding that this is Bender's catchphrase that they will like play with in the future?
I think when they made that his first line, they knew it was a catchphrase.
Yeah. It's kind of like Chandler saying, like, could I be any more blank? Yes. Where like he says it once and everyone makes fun of him for saying it. Where like Bender is like, oh, that's a cool thing. And I think he only references it from now on. Like maybe once in a while he'll say it, but like, bite my shiny daffodil. Like, it's all jokes about him saying it.
Yeah, they were like, they mad lib it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unlike Janice on Friends, she really did say, oh my God. Yeah. She was a wonderful Jewish stereotype. Really,
before that, though, I forgot that we see a mention of the lug nut shortage because they think the humans unscrew them at night and eat them at their human brunches.
They really should have gone a little harder on that since it's kind of the resolution of the episode. They could have put in a couple more references. I do really like the... Okay, so we talked about Star Trek in the last episode. There are probably more than one episode of Star Trek where someone is lost on a planet. They go to the planet to find it, and then they're like, who could possibly be the leader of this group? It's Spock! No! Or someone has gone native. I mean, one of the best gone native episodes of Star Trek was in The Next Generation when Picard became Locutus.
Oh, Locutus and Borg.
I think it's more of a Heart of Darkness thing than Star Trek.
Oh, fine. Yes, they all rip that off. Damn you.
I've also read
the
books.
Horror. The horror.
I know who Arl Stein is.
Yes, they're on the hunt and the butter trap isn't working. Humans are eating healthier these days.
Yeah, for a low calorie trap. Yeah.
I love that butter trap. Just a giant pad of butter. It's beautiful.
And Bender, I don't know if he's trying to throw them off the trail of Fry and Leela, but his description of humans is not very accurate. They're between 3 and 25 feet tall.
I think the message is there is that he doesn't care at all. He just likes being famous.
Yeah, he also doesn't want Fry and Leela to die. Like most of the time, him wanting to kill all humans is a front, except when it's not. It's hard to tell.
Also, I legit lolled at the Apple Music, at the Apple startup noise being the hunting.
Oh, yeah,
it says he does it like into a trumpet.
It's beautiful. And the hunt reminds me of Whacking Day from The Simpsons.
I wrote down the same thing.
Which I think was a Carlos Baeza episode, it might have been. Perhaps.
So they're looking for the humans, and they point out the adult robot porno store. And presumably Bender's going to go there alone and jack on.
Yeah.
I guess that's his plan all along. But that's where he finds Fry and Leela.
Bender.
What? Ooh, you! What the hell are you doing here?
We've been looking for you. Last we heard, you were under arrest as a human sympathizer.
I was. But they let me go and I told them I killed 1,000,000,000 humans.
Good for you. Now let's all get back to the ship.
What for?
We're rescuing you.
I don't want to be rescued.
Say what?
I love this planet. I've got wealth, fame, and access to the depths of sleaze that those things bring.
But Bender, we're your friends.
Friends? Well, that activates my hilarity unit. I'm just a machine to you. You're no more friends with me than you are with the toaster or the phonograph or the electric chair.
That's not true.
Well, that's how it feels to me.
Oh, I love the line about the electric chair.
Like, it's the thing they all use, like a toaster. And, well, they also say how many days they've been doing the human hunt. So, Matthew, I'm waiting on that math here.
Yeah,
you said
so
you did some math.
This is the 146,000th unsuccessful human hunt, which, not considering leap days, makes this exactly 400 years to the day.
Wow.
They do mention 4 centuries. I think Farnsworth said, like, 4 centuries ago.
To the day.
Yeah, and
The robot overlords also mentioned 400 years ago that they remained. So,
I mean, if anyone's going to get the math right, it's going to be a Futurama writer.
But they didn't do leap days. I was disappointed.
Well, though, this also assumes that planet's rotation is 365 days a year, as Earth's. And what is a year on Chapek 9?
I think robots would find leap days illogical.
And they don't sleep.
Yeah,
what do they even need day or night for?
That's true. Well, no, Bender does sleep.
Well, I guess he does.
Well, but does he need to sleep?
He recharges.
Wait a minute. This show doesn't hold up to scrutiny.
Yeah, wait a minute.
This comedy show.
This podcast is canceled. I hate this show now.
They end up in court. I do like how, of course, the judge will be an older person. In this case, it's an old Mac.
Yes. Yeah. And the strategies for fixing him are my current ones, too. Just like, well, all right, turn it on and off. No. It's cancel? No.
And Leela is really trying to throw Fry under the bus. She's like, he's a human. I am not a human. I mean, we know she's a human. She's a mutant.
I like her hitting that over and over again, like, I'm an alien, but as Farnsworth told her, they're not fans.
Yeah, that's
which
right.
We also learned she's not an alien.
Yes, that's
true.
She's
a mutant human. Mm-hmm. This is also what Bender does to the femputer. Oops, I'm not a man, I'm a man bot.
Yeah,
check
clang,
the crotch.
Clang. Yeah.
To imagine Bea Arthur being asked to read all those words.
And she does an amazing job. She's so good in that episode.
R.I.P.
So let's hear Fry and Leela's fate.
I find the defendants guilty.
Also Tom Kenny.
No! Look, one eye. Count them. One, not human.
The humans are hereby sentenced to live as robots live on Earth. They will perform tedious calculations and spot weld automobiles until they become obsolete and are given away to an inner city middle school.
Great work, Bender. You've taught us to hate humans all over again.
Hell!
They end up in front of the robot elders.
Yeah, this is a very Twilight Zone-y episode, especially in that I feel like multiple Twilight Zones have a fake ending, and then like, no, this is the real ending. You thought that was the ending, the guilty verdict? This is the real ending. Mm. And though that That court case, they could have done way more with it, but it is reminiscent of the Outer Limits episode, I, Robot, which is not really based on the book, but Leonard Nimoy was in it, and it was about a robot on trial for murder.
For the entire episode?
Yeah, for the entire episode. It was a courtroom drama, and Leonard Nimoy was one of the people in it.
Yeah, this episode has so many sets and set pieces. This must have been and with three directors and all that CG, this must have been a very expensive episode to produce.
Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't get as many lawyer jokes until we have the space chicken lawyer.
I fucking love that space chicken.
They topped blue-haired lawyer. Yeah, like that's what they were like, all right, we already have like the funniest making fun of a lawyer and possibly Jewish people. So we've also got to have
Futurama, again, it's a future show with every old joke, every Jewish joke, every doctor joke, every lawyer joke. Like, it is still about old-timey humor, which is why it's great.
I still, same reason, like if I play a French person in an improv scene, I'm holding a cigarette. If I play a lawyer in an improv scene, I'm like, no, I'm just a simple down-home lawyer.
You're locking it up.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to grab fake suspenders.
I talk about my lawyering and my lawyering books and sitch.
What a hot summer's day.
So let's hear from the Council of Robot Elders.
Hey, what is this?
Silence. It's time to put the humans to death.
But the judge already sentenced us at the trial.
Silence! That was just a show for the public. We are the true rulers of this planet, hand-carved from meteorites by the robot founders over four centuries ago.
Silence! Come forward, Bender. You will have the honor of executing the prisoners.
Silence! I concur.
Use the ceremonial killamajig.
The ceremonial killamajig. It's just a big wiffle bat with a bunch of weapons that come out of it.
That's the glaive, that he points out.
The glaive guisarm, I think he calls it.
God damn it, that silence gag. I love
silence.
It so much. Silence!
It's like a Mr. Silence. Show joke. It's such it's such a sketch joke.
We should point out, really, though, I forgot that all of this stuff is out of Matt Groening's nightmares. Like, he is afraid of robots. He said he always found robots scary because you couldn't reason with them.
And they all are in the Bender mode of a 50s robot made with an unmoving face. Mm-hmm. None of them, they light up the face. I mean, the ultimate scary robot is Santa Claus, who is such a nightmare. And just these elder robots is like telling, they all just say silence before they talk. Silence! Silence!
So Bender gives a speech to save the stupid putrid humans.
I can't kill them. Plenty of humans have mistreated robots, but not these two. They're my friends. Humans are no threat to us. They're stupid, putrid cowards.
Damn right!
The fact is, humans are completely harmless.
We're well aware of that.
You are?
Of course, but they're useful to us as a scapegoat to distract the public from their real problems.
Mm-hmm. Like our crippling lug nut shortage.
And a corrupt government of incompetent robot elders.
That's for sure.
Quiet, Jimmy.
Well, I'm glad we got all that out in the open. We'll just let ourselves out.
Silence! You all know too much.
Elders, execute function control shift kill.
And they all escape because Fry threatens to breathe fire, and they don't know if humans can actually do that or if they made it up.
Can we make that up?
That's a clever escape by Fry. It's a little too clever for him, I'd say.
That's more of a Leela idea.
Yeah, but emotionally, for the story they're telling, Fry has to save Bender back and make it up to him. But again, some of the emotionality and themes get muddled in this whole episode while they're just having fun on a robot planet.
Yeah, they run away and the robots start stacking each other to get to Fry and Leela. It's really good.
I love how Bender says, glad we all have that all out in the open, because the way they just matter-of-factly say, we scapegoat them, just like, well, no subtext needed. They can just tell you what this is about.
They shouldn't have released that information.
Yeah, it's
like,
true.
Oh, we suck.
Well, they are getting stupider, as they say.
That's for sure.
The animation on the stacking robots is great.
Does Bender kick them over?
Yeah, they get kicked over. No, they get
the package.
Their package is shoved them, and then they fall over. And all are crippled, it would seem.
Yeah, it rains lug nuts.
Yeah.
And then they decide they love humans again, which they will return to Chapek 9 in the Comedy Central seasons, and they still hate humans.
They really do.
And Bender actually goes to live there and does what the actual plot of this is. The name of the episode is Free Will Hunting from season 7, if you want to check it out.
Wow. That's a good time to make a good role hunting reference.
Real smart time to do it. Look, come on.
It's fine.
I like
it's
them
fine.
Like nuts.
It's fine. I'm not a comedy writer for TV. They're better than me.
The names of those titles weren't supposed to be seen by people and judged.
You didn't
anyway.
Go to Harvard.
I mean, they should know better by now. Everyone has the internet.
That's true. You know what?
But what's
They're
more
wrong.
Important, Matt, it's, Matt is the better point. I did not go to Harvard. I have no right to speak. So this episode ends, again, with a more Jewish stuff. Rabbonica, the celebration.
Wow, I can't believe you guys did all this for me. This is the best Rabbonica ever.
We wanted to show you that we really do respect your robot heritage.
Oh, thanks. You do know that I made Rabbonica up to get out of work, right?
Of course.
But that doesn't make it any less meaningful.
In that case, let the dancing begin!
We get a nice montage. I do like Fry and Leela like just buckling under the chair with Bender in it.
Oh, yes.
A real bar mitzvah thing.
Yeah.
Stabbing your friend in the neck with a broken bottle, not a bar mitzvah activity.
And then they could make futuristic bar mitzvah music.
Yeah.
With, like, it's beautiful. And yeah, I love the implication that he definitely stabbed Fry. Fry in the neck on the chip.
And they're fine after that. They're smiling. Yeah. He's got a bandage on.
It's a happy ending. They kind of had to speed it all up. Again, this is a funny episode with funny moments, but as a complete story, it's not their most tight plotting.
Yeah, I'm just glad they didn't stick with that semi-uncomfortable theming that they started the episode with. It was more about, it was less about, after the baseball scene, it was less about, you know, the place of robots in the world and more about how Fry and Leela saw Bender, I think, ultimately. So yes, thank you for listening, everybody. And if you're listening to this, I think you gave us money. And if so, thank you so much. If not, please give us money. I don't know how you're hearing this, but I assume it's all on the up and up. But thank you so much. Because of you guys, we were able to fund this show, and we appreciate it. We love doing it, and we appreciate everything you do for us. So please keep listening. That's all we ask of you. And if you want to find me online, I am Bob Servo on Twitter.
I'm HENEREYG.
I'm at Mr. Matt J and Disney 80s, 90s, Disney 80s, 90s.
And some minor plugs. Well, number one, I promise, on the next episode, we will not talk about massacres. That is my guarantee, guaranteed void in Tennessee. But my other podcast is Retronauts. If you're giving us money, you probably know about Retronauts. If not, it's my classic gaming podcast every Monday at Retronauts.com, or go to look up Retronauts in your podcatcher of choice. I think that's it for me. Anyone else have anything else they want to talk about?
I make a show called Cartoons 101 at YouTube.com/Cartoons101. If you like me talking about old cartoons, check that out. I've touched on The Simpsons, not quite Futurama, but I have some ideas for videos about Futurama, especially after talking about these episodes with you guys. But you can, if you want a good primer, you can check out, I made a 30-minute documentary about Steven Spielberg's influence on animation.
My goodness.
Yes, it's too long. And I made a video, but the middle one's the one you want to watch. It's all about Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And then I also made a video about Robin Williams playing the genie, how he got hired, how they lost him, how they got him back. That one was featured by the AV Club the day it went up. They really liked it, and I appreciate that. And a bunch of other videos about other
stuff.
I love
the John K one. Anything about bashing John Kirk.
Oh yeah. I still daily get comments almost a year later of people like, John K's cool, don't make fun of John K, you're a snowflake.
Yeah. Well, and I also wanted to say thanks again for listening, and check out all of our other great exclusive content on here, including interviews with folks who'd worked on The Simpsons and other animation. And please give a listen to What a Cartoon. I'm sure you are, but we're doing some really cool stuff on there, and thanks again for your support.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week for a fish full of dollars. See you then.
Funny, isn't it? The human was impervious to our most powerful magnetic fields, yet in the end, he succumbed to a harmless sharpened stick.
Oh. I'm just glad the nightmare is over.
It'll never be over, Wendy. Even now, humans are lurking in our playgrounds, our breezeways, perhaps even our movie theaters.